This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Leadership lessons from Joan of Arc, Roshan. Yep. Why Joan? Because it's Christmas.
Well, actually, Joan of Arc is very interesting, right? I mean, it's got nothing to do with really Christmas and stuff like that. But she was this amazing leader, right? I mean, 17 years old, became a leader, died at the age of 19. So talk about 2 years of unbelievable impact, right? She claimed, so okay, maybe at Christmas you had Mary hearing the voice of
right.
God, but Joan of Arc also claimed that she heard this voice of God instructing her to free her people from the English. Mm. So you know, at that point...
And she England, didn't have social media followers.
Absolutely, but she managed to rake quite a bit of followers. So, I mean, here's a fearless leader. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about her fearless leadership and how she inspired a nation to eventually realize this vision. So, Joan of Arc, just a bit of background, I mean, born 1412, died at 1431, so very young life, 19 years, was born in Domremy in France to a very poor farmer and his wife. And this farmer is very interesting. He would teach his daughter the virtues, you know, piety, humility, and somehow throughout her young life, her 20, you know, less than two decades of living, those virtues were exemplified in unbelievable ways. So this will remain throughout her life. You know, piety, humility was very big. But at that time, just to give you a bit of context, when she was born, France was engaged in this long series of conflicts with England. So England and France was sort of like a nation. They had this war called the Hundred Year War, 1337 to 1453, around those regions, right? So it was one of the long wars that was kept going on and on. So in 1420, Henry V of England took the French throne as the regent to the insane at that time King Charles VI. The plan was that Henry would take the throne following Charles' death. But unfortunately, at that time, both these guys, Charles and Henry, both died within months of each other. Okay. And Henry's young son suddenly became the new ruler. So England sort of took control back again. Charles is French, right? So now supporters of Charles' son, who was going to be called Charles VII, they pressed for opportunity for a return for a French king to lead the throne. And this is where Joan actually received a vision from God, instructing her not just to lead a virtuous life, but also to start this mission to free the French, right?
And so how did she know that her mission was to free the French from the English rule? I mean, what did she do to get her mission accomplished?
Yeah, and this is interesting, right? I mean, all we know is from bits of history and what's written about it. So in 1428, this young woman was convinced, right? Again, from visions that she received, from prayer and stuff like that, that she was involved in, that it was her mission to save France from English rule. So she didn't know how to go about doing this, right? So initially, it was like, how do you... I mean, just imagine, you know, you're a woman.
Exactly.
In the dark ages, right? You're young, right? I mean, you're not even an elderly woman with wisdom. You're this young 17-year-old girl. With no power, no nothing. So she said, okay, so she broke down the problem into... it's quite interesting, right? And we talk about leadership, right? She started to say, okay, what's the first thing that I need to do? The first thing I need to go is to meet the young Charles. I mean, this new heir to the throne, right? So how do I get a private audience with Charles, right? And she didn't know how to do it. So she said, okay, my first step is to get that. So she then started looking around. And finally, after a couple of time, she sought this help of this guy called Robert de Bedricourt, right? So this guy is the garrison commander and a big supporter of Charles. So finally, she managed to influence him to grant him an access to Charles and then convince that Charles should be giving her this access to a private audience. And so finally, in 1429, so almost a year had passed by before she finally managed to get audience with Charles. So again, 16 years old, now 17. Okay. So 1 year had passed by, she got audience. Now, during that time, Charles had a lot of reservations. I mean, here's this 17-year-old girl who is convincing him that she should be given the opportunity to head up the French army to go and fight against the English. So think about this, right? So I want to be the head of the army and I'm this young girl. Let me be the head. Let me take over the army and I will go against the English and I will grant you victory and you will be the rightful king of France. And this is interesting. So they went and dialogue for a while and then they came to a point where she said, how do I know that you are sent from God? Because I ultimately boiled down to something like that. And she again, this is speculated that she revealed to him a certain prayer that he made to God. So apparently Charles had prayed to God to say, help me save this country. And he
send
said,
me someone.
Yeah, or something like that, right? Yeah. And she said, look, I know you made this prayer and only a messenger of God will know this prayer. And he was like, okay, I'm convinced. And then he eventually let this charismatic young 17-year-old give her the permission to join the army. And they went to Orleans. I know you are going to New Orleans, but this is Orleans, the old Orleans, before they set up New Orleans in the US. So this is Orleans in France, where the English had kind of laid siege and they were trying, you know, they were trying to wipe out the French. So there was this string of heated battles over the period of a couple of days, or probably 3 or 4 days. And during this time where Joan of Arc was leading the French troops, they managed to weaken the English and then really weaken their morale. Now, unfortunately for her, she was injured twice. But in spite of that, right, she managed, and this is the final push for victory, she managed to galvanize herself, you know, with all her injuries, to go in front of the battlefield, right, where people usually die. She went into the front of it, and she managed to push the French, inspire them for that final push to victory. And in 1429, so during that same year, Charles was crowned King Charles VII of France. And Joan was there at the ceremony.
Right.
And she was present. So, I mean, this was really that whole... And really, that's the extent of Joan's fame, right?
Yeah.
This year, 1929.
And if you think about it, right, this conversation with the king, you know, and like, oh, I heard a message from God. And what did you say to God? I mean, like, you know, God says I should do this. I mean, it's quite...
it's out there, right?
Right.
How do you relate to the business? We'll talk about that in a bit.
We'll find out how we get there. But just I guess this conversation, and if the king didn't believe him, believe her, you know, it's
nothing
very hard to
happened,
say, right? Now, so how did she finally get captured, though?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is interesting, right? That usually your friends have become your enemies and so on and so forth. But the following in 1430, right, this new king sent her to a new battle, like to Compiègne, to confront this Burgundian assault. So there was like I said, a 100-year battle continued. He was named the new king of France, but the battle continued. And somehow during this battle, she was actually captured. And somehow these people who captured her actually turned her over to the English for a sum of 10,000 francs. So they managed to sell her to the English who really wanted her. Like, they couldn't stand her, right? So she was subsequently sent over to officials, and especially the church officials. And there she was actually charged with 70 counts of witchcraft, heresy. And there's another interesting charge, dressing as a man. So that was a charge too, right? And on May 29th, 1431, so about a year later, the 19-year-old Joan was convicted of heresy and was sentenced to death by being burnt at the stake. And that was, again, this momentous occasion. I mean, people talk about Joan of Arc being burnt at the stake and you know, such a big occasion. But really what happened is she was charged on May 29. On May 30th, right, she was actually taken to the marketplace in the French city of Rouen. I mean, she was actually, the sentence was actually carried out in French city. And this was about 10,000 people watched her. This heroine, the person who liberated France, essentially burnt at the stake in front of 10,000 people.
Okay, so and how was she also named a saint and martyr as well?
So that happened a little bit later. So in 1456, right, 3 years after the actual end of the Hundred Year War, so it continued, right? Charles VII actually declared Joan of Arc innocent of all charges and avowed her as a martyr. And then, more interestingly, right, she became a saint recently, right, in the last couple of years. So on May 16, in 1920, Pope Benedict actually declared her a saint, Pope Benedict XV, and she became the saint patron of France. So again, this is part of that whole Roman Catholic Church piece. But what's so interesting, I think, is in her short life, right, she demonstrated this, the qualities of a courageous servant leader. So she wasn't this rara big leader who, you know, once you succeeded, okay, now let me enjoy the pleasures of
right.
leadership. You know, and it happens a lot, right, when we set up business. Oh, now we've made it. Now let me play, you know, with Zuckerberg and let me enjoy the pleasures of leadership. But she continued serving. She continued being courageous. You know, she continued going out there. And she demonstrated a big sense of piety, humility, obscene, pristinely throughout her life. You know, and that's why I think that why she became this compelling person, right?
Well, she sacrificed her life.
That's right.
I mean, being at the front of the battle, I mean, if she didn't die there, you know, sooner or later she would have died there as well, I would think.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
You know? And I mean, the other piece is like, here's a person that you never imagine, a poor farm girl, right, from obscurity, contributed to one of the greatest freedom stories. I mean, you got the Gandhis and so on, you know, it worked it, but in 2 short years, from somehow convincing, I mean, you talk about influence, right? Really influencing the king to let a 17-year-old girl take charge of the French army. It's very inspiring, right, to see that it's possible. I mean, we talk about today where young people can make a difference, right? Here's something that 600-700 years ago, where a young person, a young female, right? I mean, you talk about today, we're still talking 700 years ago,
we're
right?
Not talking
about young people, about women issues,
yeah.
about jet, right? This is 700 years ago where it convinced a very traditional French king that you'd allow me to lead and allow me to be of service and delivering on that promise. I mean, I think what's interesting is you can make promises, but you can you execute? Can you deliver on that promise? Can you actually be able to do that? I think that's why it's so inspiring. And I think that's why, you know, whether it's being named a saint, a martyr, I mean, all these things, right? It's that story of, wow, it's possible, that anything is possible. 700 years ago, it's possible. Today, it's possible. In fact, today is more possible. With young entrepreneurs, with young women making a difference in the world and so on and so forth. But I think that's why her story has stood the test of time, you know, over the years. You know.
So we'll talk about the leadership lessons and I guess how we can apply that to the workplace in just a moment. Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics here on Leadership Lessons from Joan of Arc. You're listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Best for meetings, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Raise Your Game, a very interesting conversation on Christmas Eve. We talk about leadership lessons from Joan of Arc, Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics here. And we talk a bit about her life, 2 years, and what an impact she made in that 2 years. Of course, her ultimate sacrifice being her own life. Now, what are some of the leadership lessons we can learn from Joan?
Yeah, so I think the first easy one that comes out straight away is you got to stick to your vision despite some of the obstacles that come our way. And this is easier said than done. I mean, we talk so much. I mean, you know, 10 years running Leadernomics and I just announced a new successor to replace me in that operational role. But to me, it's, the vision remains. You know, we continue the same vision 10 years ago. It's the same vision today. And I think if you think about Joan of Arc, right, she had this vision to free France from tyranny or English tyranny, right? And she was convinced that this vision is huge. I mean, you think about it, okay, my job is to liberate Malaysia. My job is to do this, right? Where do you start, right? And I think that's one of the big lessons, I think, is when we have this big grand vision of we need to break it down into a starting point. And I think her audience with this guy, the French military leader, the Robert the Baudricourt, when she said, okay, I need to break it down into simple first step is I need to find somebody who knows this guy Charles. How do I connect with this guy? How do I get an audience with him? And then I need to convince him and I need to inspire him that I'm the right person to take this message then to the king, you know, that or the king apparent or the heir apparent. And I think these breaking down the vision into little manageable, getting the first step. Okay, if I have this big vision, what's the first step? I need to set up something. I need to get some supporters. I need to get some funding. You think about business, like many, many big steps, right? And the big vision cannot be realized until you start breaking it down to little steps. And I think many times we forget about this. We get excited about a big vision. And even to me, you know, sometimes with Leadernomics, I say, look, I need to figure out, now we're going to phase two of the business, right? Okay, you know, how do we expand globally? How do we set up operations in India and in Thailand? And I mean, and so I need to start to focus myself on that and get, you know, Caroline who took over to focus on the Malaysian work and so on and so forth. So you need to start saying what's the next and break it down. And then after that, you know, how do we take to the next level, And I think that is something that many times in life we don't figure out how to break that grand vision. You know, we all have great ideas and great vision.
Everybody's great ideas.
But how do we make it into simple, achievable, executable goals? Right. And then work tirelessly to get that little goal set up and then the next goal and the next goal and the next goal. And then don't lose heart throughout that process.
Yeah, because I think when you set those goals as well, right, you know, or people always like the big vision, it's the boring things that you need to do in between that doesn't get the glamour, but you have that vision of where all these things will lead to, right? It's just in that between there, not fun, ma.
Correct. And I'm reading this book now on Jeff Bezos, right? I mean, now the richest man
exactly,
in the world.
Exactly, right?
And it's called the Everything Store. So I'm reading about his life and I'm like, hey, this sounds very familiar, right? Because it's you have that big vision, and when he started telling everybody a big vision, people are like, well, this guy talking BS, you know, essentially. Yeah. He's like, no, what we're going to do is do a big bookstore, right? I mean, he originally wanted to build an Everything Store, right? You know, a store that has everything.
Which he has achieved.
But it's 20 years, right? I mean, it's from 96, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but when in 96 or 97, it's like, you know, like, just focus on books, right? And then when he starts going into DVDs and other things, you know, and toys, people are, oh, why are you breaking the vision? But in his mind, look, we've done books, now we get to the next, now I get the next, you know, now we go to the next, and so on. And when I read that, I said, hey, you know, he sometimes we need to break the vision into simpler chunks, yeah, so that it can be communicated and executed at our employee level.
And it wasn't
in a very
easy, because it took a long time for him to be profitable.
Absolutely.
And every quarter I'll be reading a story about how, oh, this guy is going down, going to go.
And now it's the richest guy.
And now the richest guy, but so long, right? Are you able to
exactly
pursue, despite all the criticisms, in fact, all what the investors had to say? I mean, applause also to the, you know, to the investors who stood by him, right? Yeah, yeah. But when you're not profitable for so long and to believe in it,
absolutely.
I don't know.
And this is what you mean, right? By saying, look, stick to it and keep going, right?
Right.
And I think many times he kept repeating the same thing. Look, we are building a long-term company. We are building, you know, from even, you know, I was reading some of the early memos that he was writing to his employees and to the shareholders, right? Look, we are not here for the long run. It doesn't matter. In fact, it took him almost 8 years or 7 years before he and the CFO, Joy, some lady, I can't remember, the two of them sat down and said, look, we have to start working a plan to get to profitability. Because he's like, no, we don't care about profitability. We only care about, you know, this kind of global dominate, you know, especially on the revenue side, right? If I can build the revenue, at some point in time, I'll be profitable.
Because when he built the books, he was building his database and then, boom.
Not only that, I mean, it's really about how, you know, ultimately it's changing the way of thinking of retailing, right? Because it's all about retail, right? So if I can get this, which is complex like books, and then I can start breaking retail into a very simple process, right? And I think even, you know, others, right, like Barnes & Noble and others tried, right? But they were trying to sell books, right? But he was saying, look, I'm trying to ultimately change the shopping experience. And I think there were secrets in there that, you know, that knowledge of getting it right enabled him to do that. That's a very interesting book. I mean, if you got a chance in your long flight to New Orleans, you can pick it up.
All right.
And so that's one. Like, stick to your vision. And so the second one, I think, is I think you must lead from the front.
Yeah.
Right? And I think many times as leaders, we tend to, at some point in time, not lead from the front. And I think, you know, here's this young peasant heroine, right? Without fear, leading from the front, suffering injuries, you know, she was very strong in her faith. She really believed that, yes, this is a calling. And I think many times we forget that, you know, especially when we set up a business, hey, this is a calling, right?
Yeah.
Don't forget that this is a calling, right? That you have to continue steadfast in your mission, right? And I think when we start about being strong, right, I'll just give you some bit of background, right? Prior to Joan actually leading the French, right, they were significantly humiliated and humbled in battles. They were humiliated at Crecy, at Poitiers, at Agincourt. In fact, 36,000 of the greatest French knights were annihilated at the battlefield of Agincourt on October 1415. So completely wiped out, you know. And here is a poor teenager with no schooling in the science or art of military, right? Nothing, right? She comes over, convinces them with no education, right? I am the person to lead you. I have no background, but never mind, I'll lead you. And then on top of that, the soldiers actually followed her, right? This is interesting, right? And then she goes 270 miles into enemy territory, right? Leads from the front, gets into the thick of action, and still succeeds, right? And I think, you know, I look back and say, you know, every time I start up a new business, like we started our content piece a couple of years ago, you know, Leromix.com, you know, the first thing I did was I'm starting the business, right? So I got to figure out how to write. I have to figure out how to, you know, publish it in the newspaper and, you know, basically be the editor.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, I pass it over to, you know, I pass it to Lily and so on and so forth. We have a couple of editors now, right, over the number of years. But anytime there's an issue, I know the business intimately, you know, whether it's on the customer side, whether it's on the editorial side, you know, I know it. And now we're setting up a digital business, right? So taking the trips to Silicon Valley, you know, working with Sashi, our head of the digital business. So really making sure I understand fully the business. And I think that's what being in the front line is, you know.
Right.
Many times, you know, bosses will say, okay, let me invest in something and have no clue, not being in the front line of what you're doing, you know.
Right.
And I think that is important.
And then also, you know, like, I guess with Caroline taking over or whatever, you know, the moment there is a sign of trouble as well, she's got to lead from the front and not run back to you and hide behind your skirt.
Yes.
You know, the moment there's a sign of trouble.
Absolutely. Right? And but then on the flip side, if there is trouble, I am not knowledgeable enough to be able to support.
Mm.
You know, because exactly. sometimes you set up a leader and then yeah. the leader takes it and the bigger leader has no understanding of that business, you see.
Yeah.
And we see this many times with conglomerate. I mean, part of the reason with GE and with the complexity of, you know, big conglomerates is that the big leader has experience maybe in the healthcare business and a few businesses, but hey, what about the industrial business? What about the energy business? I mean, it becomes so complex that leader, because they're not leading from the front, they have no understanding or depth to be able to truly add value. And I think, or even ask the right questions, you know, in that sense. And I think many times we need to lead from the front. And sometimes be scarred by the battle. I mean, I get calls. I mean, this morning we hosted a group, you know, Nora from Maybank and Azam from DRB. And we hosted a group of folks because we got one of the biggest guys from Silicon Valley, Carl Mehta, down here from Edcast, one of our partners. So we hosted a little group. And to me, I'm, you know, morning I have breakfast with a few of them. You know, obviously it's Sashi's, you know, Sashi's our digital head. It's his show. But you want to be there. You want to also understand. Mm. You want to lead, you know, co-lead, you know, but not take over the leadership. Like be able to be a servant-like leader, but be able to be let go. I mean, it's Karai's show, it's Sashi's show, but ultimately be knowledgeable enough to be able to lead in front.
Yes.
And I think just no, she had no knowledge of military.
Exactly.
But she will still be able to inspire, to lead. And I think when people see you in the front, they get a lot more confident. Wow,
right.
Boss is interested in our business.
Mm-hmm.
Boss is taking the lead to be there. And I've seen that with a number of leaders. You know, a couple of leaders do that. They lead from the front, but others are not, you know. And
right.
and I think it's important, especially if you start your own business, you got to lead from the front. And, okay. and you got to be strong and you got to continue to support your team, you know, up there in the front of them.
Another lesson.
Yeah, and my final lesson, I think, is I think you always have to remain true to values. And I think this is a tough one, you know. You know, following her private conversation with Charles, right, even though this future King of France was impressed by Joan's spirit, you know, he had all these different churchmen come and examine her.
Pardon the pun, huh? The spirit.
Yeah, yeah. and you know, only after they found this young woman was driven by piety, chastity, humility, right? Then did they start to say, okay, let's give her a shot, you know. And I think values say a lot about you. When you lead, right, people look to you and they examine you and they start to say, is that a person of values, you know, is that a person of integrity? Is that a person that we can partner with, that we can do business with? Is that an authentic leader? And I think, you know, I was with Nora Manaf, who's the head of HR for Maybank. And this morning, and she's like, hey, you know, Roshan, I Googled Carl Mehta and I say, what the hell, who's this guy and what's he about? And I was reading all about his background and everything, you know, because whenever I go see somebody, I check them out, right?
Yeah.
I want to know their authenticity, their value, what people are saying. And you know, I was in Sabah last week with a friend and I was taking care of their kids and we were going around and the daughter, 17-year-old, was like, let me check the reviews. You know, everything, I'm going to, this place. Okay, let me check the reviews. I'm going to watch a movie. Let me check the review. I don't trust Rotten Tomatoes. I only trust this. I'm like, okay, whatever. But this is important, right? Because today, right, the life you lead, right, the values you espouse and whether you live it and how authentic you are as a leader, right? People are checking you out. People are seeing.
Yes.
People are observing. And I think with Joan, right, I think why she made such a profound impact is that it wasn't I say something and I do something else, you know. It was the way I live is the way I act, is the way I go out and do stuff and I deliver, right? And when people saw that, right, they said, wow, I can take a shot at a 17-year-old.
Mm.
And I think our young people today, right, we say, oh, we're not being given a shot. We're not being, you know, but I think it goes back to values, you know. What are you a value-driven? Do you live the values that you espouse? Do you walk it? Do you talk it? Do you live it? You know, and I think we must call, you must ask, we must question ourselves. I think this time is a good time to be reflective.
Yeah.
You know, I was just having a conversation with my son about being reflective and he's like, okay, I'll spend a few minutes a day being reflective. And
yesterday's reflection
was not bad. He's like, I'm going to stay away from the iPad. I was like, okay, that's a very good reflective item. But I think you got to look at your values and you say, how clear are they? How do you hold to them?
Mm.
How do you, even if they're short-term losses, you know, you talked about Amazon, right? Is living the values, right? Living what you believe, living what, you know, building a long-term company like Jeff Bezos, right? Mm. Does that supersede, you know? And we've seen that, right? Whenever there's short-term losses, we get excited and the board comes after you, you know, happened many times. And then you're like, oh, and you start to change and deviate from what you say you should do, right?
Mm.
You know, this is what we need to do. Oh, we've change, right? And of course, today's world is such that it's a vocabulary, right? And so it's hard to to differentiate, are you changing because you need to and because the world dictates it, or are you changing because you're forced to,
right,
and it goes against your values and what you stand for, right? And I think that's important, you know, in this time, especially, you know, we talk about new resolutions, and as we start, you know, how many of us really understand what our values are, what's core to us, and what we want to hold on to and what we will never compromise, and because we need to know that before that moment of truth comes,
that
you know, that we stand in front of that moment of truth and have to make those decisions. But we need to know what they are. And I think Joan of Arc, one thing great about it is, like, look, she always remained true to her values. And I think that's powerful, right? You know, whether you're a business leader, whether you are, you know, NGO leader, whatever it is, you know, a young person, to say, I want a shot to be like Joan. You know, maybe not the dying part on a stake, but, you know, at least being 17 and be able to change the world in a significant way, you know.
Right. Final thoughts on this topic, a reflective thought on this topic.
Yeah, so so as one era, you know, it's been 10 years on BFM.
Yeah,
so for me, you know, it's time for Caroline to take over, and, you know, she needs to step in. So I won't, you know, part of it is like, hey, Caroline, you should be on the show. You should be on Raise Your Game. And so I'm going to be retiring, you know, sort of from Raise Your Game. Maybe we'll do something else with Frida on the coaching side and so on. But I think there's a point in time that I think it's a good time in 2018 as 2019 comes in to start reflecting, you know, and really looking and saying, when is a good time to let go? When's a good time to be true to yourself? Mm. When's a good time to continue fighting and not give up on the mission? So, you know, again, you know, if you start breaking down and saying the Leromics, for me, is the Leromics vision is a big one, right? We want to transform nations, right? To do that, you cannot be sticking and being forced to do one thing. You need to move to the next thing and next thing. But you need to bring in the right successor. You need to prepare them, you know. So she's had 2 years, you know, preparation, big, huge background, you know, PwC and other areas. You know, it's ready now. I need to move. I need to let go and move on. And I think it's the same for all of us. We need to, at different points in life, we need to say, hey, there's a season for everything. Mm. You know, a season to love, a season to hate, a season to fight, a season to cry, and so on and so forth, right? And I think as we come to one season, you know, end of the year is always a good time to look at your seasons and say, what season is it? Am I in the same season for next year? Mm. Or is it a new season for me? And I think, you know, looking at Joan of Arc and, you know, looking at a person with such strong values and such strong conviction, I think if we don't have a clear conviction in our heart, what's our mission? You know, go find it. If we are not convinced on what our values are, go search for it and ingrain it. And I think if we can do this right, this new 2019 will be an unbelievable season for us, for Malaysia, you know, and for the world, right? So I'll leave you with that thoughts, and it's a goodbye, you know,
for
now.
No, it's not. I will see you again. Don't worry. You'll be dragged back, Roshan. Don't try to escape. Roshan Thiru from Leadernomics, Leadership Lessons from Joan of Arc. A blessed Christmas and a happy New Year.
And blessed Christmas to everyone, all listeners, and have a great 2019. It's going to be a wonderful year. I just feel that it's going to be a awesome year ahead.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.